Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Robert Lawson, representing R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, and I will begin where your questions were leading, Judge Easterbrook, but I would like to try to cover during the course of my argument, first, the summary judgment issues that have been raised by Cigarettes Cheaper, then the challenges to the Robinson-Patman trial, and then to the challenges raised by the trademark trial. Although no arguments have been presented, we, too, I believe, will rest on our briefs with respect to the trademark issues. Now, a little bit of background, a very brief, may be helpful to start out. When Cigarettes Cheaper entered business in 1994, Philip Morris was trotting out a new approach to the retail marketplace called the Philip Morris Exclusive. That was a contract that gave Cigarettes Cheaper all kinds of promotions and benefits and gave Philip Morris all basically the majority of the signage and presence in the store. And this also had the effect of foreclosing other manufacturers from having those same advantages. RJR developed merchandising contracts in order to compete with that phenomenon, and that really is what this case is about. Despite our efforts to get Cigarettes Cheaper to abandon the Philip Morris Exclusive and to sign our contracts, which would enable them to take an industry approach and deal with the cigarettes of all manufacturers, displaying them, but also receiving promotions and buy amounts, they elected not to do that until March of 2000. Important, I think, given the nature of their allegations about what agreements were reached, to explain the concept of buy-downs. A buy-down basically is a discount which is designed by the manufacturer to get straight to the consumer. So there is no discussion with the retailer about what the retailer's price will be. It is only an agreement that once the retailer sets its price, that it will give a discount below that price to the consumer. So there are inevitably conversations between retailers and manufacturers about the enforcement of this provision. And that's a lot of what Cigarettes Cheaper is complaining about when it speaks of Vons and Albertsons and some of the other retailer agreements. But picking up your questions, Judge, our belief is that the conspiracy claim that Cigarettes Cheaper asserts here is economically implausible, and states no antitrust claim. If you think about the basic components of it,
it's a per se violation under Saccone vacuum law, even if it's economically implausible, as the conspiracy alleged in the hot oil case was, it's still unlawful per se. And what your adversary said that gave me the most pause is that there was an agreement with retailers to raise the price they would charge for Philip Morris products, which, if made, really would be a classic conspiracy, certainly covered by resale price maintenance doctrine.
If there were resale price maintenance, then that's per se.
Also, if you're price maintaining the products of your rivals.
But, in fact, I think that's not, there's no basis in the record for that. And
what am I going to find when I turn to pages 191 and 52 to 54.
I believe you'll find a brief examination of one witness, and I think you will find one of the lines of Albertson's documents. I'm not sure which one it is, but what it reflects is what I was describing earlier. The relationship between RJR and Vons and Albertson's, by which there is a relationship between them with the prices. I should explain also that these merchandising contracts, and there are different levels of them, the retailer can have the option of choosing a particular level with a particular manufacturer. And so what it says is that with respect to the contract that's in place between Reynolds and Vons and Roy Albertsons, and they're independent contracts, there's no evidence in terms of conversation between Reynolds and Albertsons or any other retailers. But as a result of those contracts, there is a relationship, expected relationship, between Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds. In other words, R.J. Reynolds says, we would give you better benefits if you charge, if you give us a differential between your price for Philip Morris and your price for R.J. Reynolds. It is not saying anything to the retailer about what price it ought to charge for Philip Morris or R.J. Reynolds. So there is no agreement as to the retail price.
So your contention is that what we'll see there is a potential offer from RJR to say, we'll give you more money if you reduce the price of RJR products below those of Philip Morris products.
It's not an offer.
You want to characterize that as a price reduction, and the adversary wants to characterize that as a price increase for Philip Morris.
But why would we need any price increases? What damage does it do to cigarettes cheaper if there is
a reason? If in fact you agreed with your retailers to increase the price of Philip Morris products, cigarettes cheaper is, of course, better off. And then there'd be an interesting question whether it suffers antitrust injury, but the parties haven't argued antitrust injury in this litigation.
Well, we do need an article, Your Honor. And article, of course, is an antitrust injury case, saying, in essence, that unless there is a problem that stems from a competition-reducing aspect of the behavior, then there is not an antitrust injury and no recovery. So I think we will argue that, and that's part of why we think this is economically implausible. There is no predatory pricing, as no allegation and no proof of it here. There is no evidence that price ever went anywhere above the competitive level, whether before or after. There is no possibility here of recoupment, even going back to the proof standard for showing predatory pricing. And this is a situation in which there is no market power. I mean, RJ Reynolds had a declining share of from 25 to 22% during the relevant period here, while Philip Morris has a share of 50%. And so, as long as the pricing is non-predatory, and in the article and other precedents, there can be no basis for the antitrust claim. And as to the intent that RJR would have had, now that, of course, is completely irrelevant. This court has said again and again that intent, in the absence of some conduct, is not actionable under the antitrust laws. And given all of this, Your Honor, it should be no surprise that cigarettes cheaper never retained an industrial organization economist to explain these theories to the court, to hear the court, the lawyer of the court here. Now let me turn to the question whether there's a horizontal link, just to make sure that we have covered it. The judge below, Judge Kukoros, found that there was no evidence of a horizontal ring, no joint agreement among retailers or among wholesalers. In fact, that idea is inconsistent with their theory, and the theory is always been that RJ Reynolds has orchestrated some kind of an agreement. And the expressions of concern they point to, of course, have no relevance under Monsanto and other cases. Cigarettes cheaper took discovery, depositions and documents from over 30 retailers and found absolutely no evidence or no knowledge of any kind of conspiracy. As I said before, even if there was an agreement, even if there were, and the judge properly found there was not, we said there was not an agreement in the stream of trade because there was nothing in this record about raising prices above a competitive level. The volume analysis documents, which are the heart of what Cigarettes Cheaper points to as support for its various arguments, only refer to returning prices to their pre-existing level if their programs, their individual programs, Vons and Albertsons programs, are successful. But in order to understand these documents, it's important to think about the time sequence that occurred here. The documents that they point to, including the ones that were cited to you earlier, Your Honor, come from 1996. This is a period in which RJ Reynolds had been trying for months, even years, to try to get cigarettes cheaper to come on contract. They saw RJ Reynolds had two ways of battling the Philip Morris exclusive. One was to persuade retailers to get on a contract, and the other, following short of that, was to compete as hard as they could. And we submit that those Vons and Albertsons documents show what happens when RJR, working with his partner retailers who are on contract with RJR, work hard to compete to lower price. So to get back to your point,
how do they work hard to compete? Even trying to sell more product?
Sales
gimmicks or something?
Trying to sell a product by offering competitive discounts and promotions to their partner retailers, the retailers with whom they have contracts. That leads to more promotions, more display in stores, and that is the means by which they are working to compete with cigarettes cheaper.
And depreciating the prices at the same time.
Yes, prices are going down. That's what's ironic about this whole case. If these facts are not familiar, two cases they were on and Toys R Us, or Denny's Media. Those are cases, say Toys R Us. Toys R Us is a non-toy retailer. This was one of the manufacturers joined the boards on the board that on the condition that their competitors would do the same thing. Court also found that the conspiracy made no economic sense, was against the individual interests of the putative conspirators. And that's, of course, very different from what happened here. But obviously, it was an independent interest of the retailers to lower their price to compete with Philip Morris exclusives. And it was an independent interest of RJR.
You know, I've always, this may be a little off the point, but I always thought a lot of the cost involved in cigarettes was tax. What control do you have over pricing of cigarettes if the government's involved in taxing them so heavily?
Well, I think you're correct in saying that taxes have become a significant part of cigarette pricing. That still leads to the manufacturers in a competitive marketplace, and nobody disputes this is a highly competitive business, to set prices that they feel will attract more customers, more consumers, than their competitors will. And this happens on a brand-by-brand basis across the country, Your Honor.
Of a carton of cigarettes, say, cost about $35 or something today. What percentage of that is tax?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that. If it's important, I would be happy to try to determine.
It's just more curiosity, because you have to take that into account in determining what the price is going to be for pack cigarettes or carton cigarettes.
There is a retail price set and then a tax put on that, so that, yes, that has to be taken into consideration. Let me turn to Penny Community, which is the other case that they featured.
But by the way, in considering whether RJR has market power, should we take into account the fact that RJR and Philip Morris have conspired with the attorneys general of most states to prevent the entry of any competition in this market?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
If the question is whether RJR has market share, then this whole cigarette settlement has always struck me as a very clever of the cigarette manufacturers to block the entry of any new competition. The states are being paid for their role in facilitating that. Now, if there can't be new entry in this market, how can RJR not have considerable market power?
Well, RJR by itself, Your Honor, does not have considerable market power.
And that's your own response, because that means that you have market power. RJR increases and drops the price of cartons of its cigarettes by dollars, you know, $5 at a time, without losing its entire sales. The definition of market power is the ability to increase price without an immediate loss of substantial business volume. When these discounts are taken away, RJR does not immediately lose substantial business volume. If you look at the test for market power stated in the antitrust guidelines, we know that well, this is a concentrated market and RJR has market power.
This is a concentrated market, but I don't
know that RJR has market power because it varies its own prices by more than 5% over short periods without losing substantially all of its business.
But
that's the definition of market power. That's the working antitrust definition of market power.
It isn't me, but the governor on what RJR is able to do with respect to its own interest in raising price is what Philip Morris does. There is no question that the leader in this business, the price leader, is Philip Morris. And RJR does not have the independent ability to raise prices without losing a substantial amount of its business, because Philip Morris would take that business.
It can't raise price beyond a certain level without losing business, without losing too much business. But that's true even with an absolute monopolist. Absolute monopolist raises its price above the place where marginal cost meets marginal revenue, and it goes into the tank. But we wouldn't say that that shows the monopolist lacks market power.
The question is whether when a company raises price above the competitive level, whether it loses substantially all of its business. And there's no
way to do it
in this record, it's a result of it. But I don't believe that's the standard. It doesn't, the cases don't, I don't believe, say a certain portion. Certainly, when prices
are what is substantially in the line, 50%, right. Those side or up.
It's a very large amount in my mind. I believe that's what the cases stand for. All right, let me return to the damage you mean. Just briefly. Denny was also not a case remotely like this one. It's a case in which there was an agreement at the horizontal level. And the important thing about both Denny and Toys R Us is in each case, there was an immediate effect on competition. In Toys R Us, there were a number of retailers out there who did not get manufacturers' products, and in Denny's Marine, the price-cutting distributor was shut away from his access to the consumers. All right, let me turn to the question of illness and evidence, which is raised by Cigarettes Cheaper. Cigarettes Cheaper, in addition to citing it in connection with its case on conspiracy, also tried to repackage it to use it in the Robinson patent trial. This, of course, is an evidence issue in the trial, and is therefore subject to the issue of abuse of discretion when Judge Kokoris denied the admissibility of the evidence. As I said before, this circuit has often held that in the absence of conduct, that the support of violation intent does not matter. As well as they can find in a series of other cases that are cited there. The district court here carefully limited each side to evidence of conduct, what it did, and what each said to the other, and what the response was, all that related to issues in the Robinson patent case. The court properly ruled that internal thoughts, motives, and a handful of documents that contain colorful language with not relevant, but even if it were relevant, it would be extraordinary revelation. Whether RJR deliberately, intentionally charged different prices is simply not relevant. Its conduct, not in another state, is on trial in the holding of Herval and Miller. It's not relevant to the functional availability offense because that's a knowable fact. Either, and the jury heard all the evidence on that, either RJR made its offers to the retailers, and they were accepted or rejected. It made its offer available to Cigarettes Cheaper, I should say, and it was accepted or rejected, or it wasn't. It's an objective fact, and the motive behind it has nothing to do with it. The meaning competition defense, similar. The good faith requirement there is that the good faith that RJR had to show that it believed its prices were meeting the lower prices of a competitor, and its belief is objectively reasonable. That's the standard false suit. And that is, to the instructions issue, that's exactly what the instruction we challenged also said. And the case is cited by the end is not otherwise. And if one considers this evidence to be relevant, it's clear, it's unfair prejudice and confusion, and waste of time in the conduct of this already 5-week jury trial, would be implicated.
Why did it take 5 weeks to try this case as it was?
It was heavily litigated. Let's just say that way, Your Honor. All right. Well, I think I have covered the points I wish to cover. We have to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Gibbons, anything further?
I do. Thank you, Judge. Your Honor,
you should face in our direction, please.
I will do.
Your Honor, I directed the court's attention earlier to Special Appendix 191. Special Appendix 191 is in the middle of a nine-page document or so, which reflects the agreement between RJR and Vons that we have discussed in detail in my earlier comments. That document is reflective of the desire on the part of RJR to eliminate cigarette streaker, spells out how it will eliminate the cigarette streaker. And then on page 191 at the bottom, it says, quote, once results are achieved, Vons Pavilion slowly over time will reduce Vons Club discounts back to normal Vons Pavilion retail pricing. That's a statement of an intention to raise retail prices once cigarettes cheaper is out of the way. Secondly, Your Honor,
I thought the reason you cited this to me was to show that there was an agreement to raise the price of Philip Morris product. RJR can raise its own price anytime it wants. It doesn't have to have permanent discounts. And if your contention is that RJR is letting its retailers know that its discounts won't last forever, that's hard to see as a per se violation. But if there's some agreement to raise the price of Philip Morris product, that's easier to see as a problem.
And I submit, Your Honor, this document is reflective of that. Indeed, you anticipated inadvertently, I assume, what my next reference to the document was going to be. In the record, Special Appendix 229, page 229, again, it is the third page of an interoffice memorandum at RJR. This memorandum reports on the results of the program with Albertsons, another retailer with whom RJR conspired. It reports that in one instance, a store manager had reduced the prices on Marlboro. Marlboro is Philip Morris product. And as the memo says, it resulted in Marlboro having a price advantage on us. Quote, we met with Albertsons about this matter this week. We have an action plan to identify these stores and get this matter corrected. This is in an RJR document expressly identifying conduct that was not in accord with the Albertsons conspiracy and taking steps to address it.
What's wrong with that? That sounds like the statement RJR is saying to its retailers, we will give you a discount if you agree to sell our product for less than our rivals. Otherwise, we won't give you a discount. Is that an antitrust violation?
I believe if what you are doing is fixing the price of Philip Morris product and the product of other retailers.
On that view, isn't cigarettes cheaper engaged in a conspiracy with Philip Morris for the same reason? Because my understanding of the exclusive that cigarettes cheaper side was that it was very much of the same kind. Philip Morris gave cigarettes cheaper a discount if it would agree to sell for less.
But I have no knowledge of anything in the record where there was any agreement on the part of cigarettes cheaper to fix the prices of RJR Obama, Winston Salem, or Kim. Nothing in the record about that, and we do have that in the record about Philip Morris and in this case, Albertsons.
If you were to jump around from cigarette to cigarette, depending on how much it costs.
Pardon me?
You jump around from cigarette. If there's a Winston smoker, do you switch to Marlboro's if they're a little bit cheaper?
Generally not.
Everybody always gets hooked on these things. Do you stay with it until it kills you or something?
Generally not. There's a high degree of brand loyalty among consumers. to all products.
Well, how can all these shenanigans have any effect on the marketplace?
Well, they have effect on the marketplace in a couple of ways, Your Honor. There are a lot of ways at the margin, the potential for having people switch. Secondly, in the
world, if I'm smoking Camels my whole life, unfiltered Camel cigarettes, I'm going to switch because they're 50 cents a pack more than somebody else's cigarettes.
No, you probably won't, Your Honor, and that would place you among the approximate 95% of smokers, if indeed that was your profile. But it's also the case that manufacturers have an interest in securing new smokers precisely because of brand loyalty. If new smokers are beginning to enter the market, it's important for these manufacturers to get those new smokers on its product, and those new smokers may be affected by price. Secondly,
you still want to get a lot more new smokers.
Pardon me?
It's important to get a lot more new smokers.
Well, it's a high-profit industry, Your Honor, so it is possible to make a lot of money with comparatively small changes in market share.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement. Our next case this morning is Jalal.